Welcome to Failing Up, a podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It could even mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led them to something positive.
We hope this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
My name is Eden.
And I'm Guy. Beatrice Springborn.
Yes.
Beatrice Rose Doneth Springborn?
Doneth. I have my mom's maiden name.
That's a great name.
That's a great name.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate so much. Beatrice Rose Doneth Springborn. You said Doneth is your mother's maiden name?
Doneth is my mother's maiden name.
Wow.
And she kept it and decided to give it to me as another name.
And you decided to run with it.
Yeah.
Was there any thought ever of like, this is just too much?
To shorten my name?
Yeah.
No, because I think part of it was my mom was like, well, I'm keeping my name and I want you to have it in your name as well. And represent as well.
There's something there.
Yeah, there's
okay.
Something there.
I can
at least
see
she
that.
She didn't hyphenate or do the kind of like half mixing the last names. She didn't do like Doneborn or.
Yeah.
I have a friend who has two names like that. And his parents were like, no hyphenate. Yeah.
No.
Does it take you as a kid, a long time to learn how to write your name?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Because I mean, my last name is Opachinsky, and that's why my first name is Guy.
Yeah.
So I remember Opachinsky is a struggle. There's a lot to it. There's a chin, there's a ski, and there's an Opo in there. It's a mess. Anyway, Beatrice, thank you again for being here. You are the head of original programming at Hulu, currently.
Correct. Currently.
Yeah.
For another 2 days.
No, I mean, meaning that it's a pretty fairly new title, right? How long have you been with Hulu?
I will have been there 3 years this June.
Okay, so not that new. Guy is way off.
Yeah.
But let's do this. What we like to do here on Failing Up is start at the beginning. So you were born in Ohio.
Wow, this is scary. Yes.
What part of Ohio were you born in?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, so the north part of Ohio. Mm-hmm. See, I know that. I lived in Ohio.
Yeah.
So, and how long did you live in Ohio for?
I lived there 2 years. My parents met in high school at Shaker Heights High School.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved back there when I was in elementary school because my mom ended up teaching at Bowling Green State University, site of the famous Bowling Green Massacre, as we're all aware.
Right,
right.
Of R.I.P.
Right, it must have great stories.
Yeah, famous stories.
But you didn't just live in Ohio. You grew up in multiple states.
Many states.
Yeah. How many states did you live in?
Let's see. Ohio, Minnesota, back to Ohio, Maine, Kansas.
Are you registered in
Kansas.
All these states? Because that would help.
As a what? Southern California.
Okay.
Northern California.
Wow.
I think that's it.
And all before, how old are you when this is happening? Like 12, 13? Like up to that age?
Up to about 12, 13. And then when I was in high school, we moved to Northern California. And then Southern California, then Northern California. And then I went to,
Does that make you different than the other kids? Like, is your worldview a little bit different?
Yeah. I mean, I had a really solid home life. So my parents were like, are still like madly in love and had been together since they were 14. And, you know, so there's that sort of like, you have this stable family life that helps, I think, with the instability of moving around. But I do think it makes you more, you know, they say like, it makes you more adaptable and you can make friends more easily.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's true.
Okay, so you were very healthy.
Yes,
young
for
life,
sure.
And your mom, you said, was a professor.
She was,
and your dad a nurse.
My dad was actually not a nurse until later.
Okay,
my dad dropped out of college one paper short of graduating from University of Wisconsin at Madison, and he was a printer and did like a bunch of really strange, odd jobs most of my life, putting my mom through her BA, master's under or PhD. Yeah, he was a printer. He worked nights for like 2 years at some psychiatric hospital.
Oh my
for
goodness.
Teens. Like he just did like all these odd jobs and kind of like blue collar random jobs and put my mom through school. And then when my mom was tenured, he went back to school and became a public health nurse. Like got his bachelor's
the
degree.
The roles were been reversed.
They were definitely reversed.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
Yeah,
like he's held off on his dreams
essentially.
That's
so
bit.
Great. Definitely did. I can't believe there was not more like pent up resentment going on there.
I'm really surprised though too, though this sounds like such a like a feministy thing.
Yeah.
And sure. That's great to hear that, like, definitely. And from Ohio, that's even more mind blowing.
No kidding.
Like, right? I never hear that.
Those
kind
guys
of thing.
Are all Republicans.
Bruce Springsteen song.
Essentially it is, yes. Yeah.
Are you a good student in school?
I was. I was like definitely not the math with. It was weird. I was in all honors classes for the arts. And then when I was in high school, they decided to drop me into like AP. They're like, oh, you're good at all the other stuff. We're going to drop you in like AP chemistry. And that was a total disaster.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was. Yeah.
Yes. I had a similar experience actually. And chemistry is one of those things that like I still to this
remember
day.
Remember balancing equations? Ugh.
I walked into a chemistry class that was way above my head. Like I walked in like, and these kids had already done
totally
gross
chemistry and I had not done any. And they're like, yeah. Oh, now you know how to split the atom and just go ahead and split the atom right now. They're like, right. Everyone's like, okay. And they're splitting atoms. I'm like,
go make an H-bomb guy. Yeah. You know what you're doing.
They were all, I swear the whole class was doing it, but no, they were all doing equations and all that stuff. And I'm like, I didn't learn any of this stuff. I got an F.
They didn't believe in me from the beginning. I was in AP English and history, but with like, they put me in like pre like algebra when I was like in 12th grade. Oh, yeah. They put me like with the ninth graders when I was in 12th grade.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was never really a math person
myself.
Yeah, I was
not a math or science person. Somehow they assumed, like, you're good in this. That's
why
you should get in this.
I never, like, oh, guys, you want to calculate the tip? Not me.
Yeah. So.
That part I could do. That's about all I can do. So what did you want to be when you were a kid?
I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a journalist. So I spent most of my, like, summers going to, like, writer's camps and going to author seminars. And my parents, like, would ship me off to, like, when authors would come to town, they'd do like day camps and little writer like seminar things. And I always thought that's what I wanted to do until the internet came along and crushed that dream. But that's a longer story. I always wanted to be a writer. And, you know, film and TV wasn't in my world. My parents were huge film buffs. Like my dad had a Betamax before anyone else. And he had HBO before anyone else. And my parents had pirated copies of Star Wars and like knew all the like artists and filmmakers in town and like knew every actor's name and were just like very versed in the arts.
You had hip parents.
I had very hip parents. My mom had me when she was 20. So they were very like, they were young and hip.
They were your friends.
Cultured. Yes. Wow. But I was not someone who like from the age of 5 wanted to be, I'm trying to think of the female equivalent of Steven Spielberg at the time. I don't even think there was one.
Yeah. But you want to be a writer, but you said that, how did the internet crush your dream?
Well, I wanted to be a journalist.
Oh, right.
And that crushed your dreams.
I wanted to be like hardcore newspaper journalist. Mm-hmm.
Like one with the hat that says press on
totally.
It.
Yeah, yeah, with the little ticker tape.
Exactly.
On the side. I went to University of Kansas for journalism school and studied under like these grizzled guys who'd like worked the copy desks at the Kansas City Star, New York Times, and like did a bunch of coke and, you know, had all these like crazy stories. You know, they were like these hardcore journalists.
I didn't know about this underworld of journalism.
Oh, they're, you know, they like came up somehow. In the 70s and thought that's what I wanted to do. And then right about the time I was going to graduate, literally the internet was discovered and it just, print journalism started to die.
Yeah.
And reporters were losing their jobs and like, even like I my dream out of college was getting a job as a copy editor, which right now sounds like my worst nightmare ever. and those jobs just didn't exist. So
what did you do right out of college? Didn't you get a job as a copy editor?
I did. Well, I
editorial assistant.
I did. I went to work for Texas Monthly magazine in Austin as a intern to start, and then they gave me this weird editorial assistant gig that at the time was running their website, which was one page.
Yeah.
It was like texasmonthly.com. You went to texasmonthly.com and it brought up just like three lines of text of what was in the magazine.
So yeah. It's like a tweet.
Yeah. My job was to write like, this is what's in the magazine this month.
Yeah.
This is an advertisement for the magazine. And then I worked for a magazine about Unix computing.
Really?
Randomly. I don't think anyone knows what Unix computing is. Spelled U-N-I-X.
Yes.
Unix computing.
It sounds like one of those fake companies that you see like on Silicon Valley, like Hooli.
It's actually still used today.
It is.
Unix.
Yeah. And I had no...
I'm a geek enough to know that.
Yeah, you
are. Linux and Unix and all that stuff.
I basically just regurgitated press releases. And then I worked for CNN. I was, again, took an internship and worked a lot on the Unabomber case, researching and doing like random tasks, because at that time my parents lived in Sacramento and the trial was in Sacramento. So they're like, hey, do you know where to get a good sandwich in Sacramento? Like, you can be a PA there. And then they ended up like promoting me to a researcher.
Oh, wow.
So recently graduated, yeah. Beatrice still thought she wanted to be a journalist, yes. Kind of.
Yeah. I mean, at that enough. Time, like there was still a little bit of that dream, yeah. alive. And then I got really lucky, and a woman named Heidi Swanson, who runs she's now a pretty well-known cookbook author. She runs a site called 101 Cookbooks. She's like this like really well-known vegan, vegetarian blogger. She had started this website for women. God, I don't know what year that was. 2001? I don't know. Called Chick Click. Sounds like a porn site, wasn't?
It does.
For women, kind of like a women in technology portal, but trying to spin off. I don't know if you guys know IGN, but at the time, there was a company called Imagine Media. They had this site called Chick Click. They ended up merging with IGN later. But she had seen, I'd made a website in college called Mousy about women in technology. Mm-hmm. That was all about like profiling women who'd done cool things in technology, whether that there was like a woman who did graffiti online or like composed music online. And so had done this entire magazine dedicated to like women in technology, women at the crossroads of technology. She'd seen it and she hired me to run all of their editorial. So at the age, I don't know, I was like 23 years old, they hired me in this like crazy startup in San Francisco to manage a staff of like 60 people who, wow. all had like way more journalism experience than I did, mm-hmm. were way smarter than me. And that was my crash course.
But you were in charge of the actual website.
I was in charge
of
all
the
editorial.
So are you writing HTML?
I was writing HTML, but I was also just, they had like movie reviews and music reviews and like just... I mean, it was definitely like during the first wave of Riot Girl feminism. And mm-hmm. there was this site called Estranet. It was around the time that like Bust magazine was around, and
oh, right.
Bust had,
yeah.
just gone online, mm-hmm. and it aggregated a lot of that female content and put it into this one hub called Chick Click.
And your title was executive producer.
It was editorial manager or something, well, or probably something like very .com
says
content strategist. I have no idea. It was some like horrible, what does my LinkedIn say?
It says executive producer.
Something like that.
Oh, I do my,
yeah.
research. Trust
oh,
me.
Oh, because I produced a radio show for them. So that was part, okay. of it too. Yeah.
Guy, can we, yeah. put that on our LinkedIn?
You should.
I never do that. I don't mix my, you know, my one LinkedIn with the one, oh, side, okay. of things with the other side, uh-oh. Of things. I have like, yeah. a regular sales software job kind of thing. And so I don't mix the podcast typically.
Do you use a different name?
Well, so I just say, I call, for the most part, I don't say my last name on air. I just say Guy, and uh-huh. like my Twitter's The Guy DF, and I don't have my picture on it and all that stuff, just because I try to keep those worlds
He's
a little
a
bit
weird
separate.
Anonymous. Yeah.
The funny part is though,
I'm like
every
open.
Once in a while I'll get caught by like a boss or whatever. Like I had a boss that caught me, like, he's like, I saw your Twitter. And he's like, it's a walking HR nightmare. But it's hilarious. And so I'm following you now. And he told me he was following me. And yeah.
He's like, I got my eye on
Yeah. And I'm like, shit, I don't. This was like my director. And I'm like, oh, you know, he's God. Like two guys over me. And I'm like, I don't want this guy following me on Twitter. Because I'm like talking about, you know, nefarious things. Right. And yeah, no, you just don't want that. He actually, the funny part is, he just unfollowed me about a month ago.
He did? Because you were talking mean things about Trump?
Bingo.
I knew it.
Really?
I
knew
it.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, and then so I was
we
like,
had Trump supporters.
I was cool. I didn't unfollow him at first, but then I was like, I didn't know if he was a Trump supporter. But then he tweeted this like link, and it was like a right wing like
Breitbart
YouTube
type thing.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, that's where he is. Unfollow. Oh, yeah, I'm not, God. Into any of those guys. But that's, yeah, there's a whole thing with that. As a matter of fact, I'll even go further back. This guy offered me a job. I lost my job. He offers me a job. And then after like a month of we were waiting and he was coming back to me, I came back to him. I'm like, hey, how's everything looking? He's like, oh yeah, it got delayed. I'm busy making America great again. And I'll let you know. Yeah. And right there, I'm like, oh fuck.
Did he give you a hat?
He gave me no jobs. What are you? Oh, no. They're like, but that's good.
Okay. He could go work in the coal mines.
Exactly. And I will.
The jobs back and the steel, right?
So back to Chick Click, was there like a bubble? Did it burst? Is that what happened? And then you just out of a job? And
I
then...
like to tease that. I think I was making more money then than I do now. But that's funny. I also was just, but it was a really great experience. And all the women that I worked with then are all still my friends now. And I've all gone on to do like really amazing things.
Oh, that's amazing. It's probably cool to watch like now.
Yeah. And it was just an interesting microcosm of people in their early 20s learning how to be managers in a crazy startup.com environment that had no idea what it was doing.
Are there any lessons that you like specifically took from there that you could think of?
I mean, I think a lot of management lessons, but also just that whole internet 1.0. You see a lot of the mistakes being made again.
Yeah.
Not at Hulu. definitely not at
No.
And the fast paced nature, or just like not being considerate about what you're doing. And I think, you know, it was also an experience I had where it was, you know, probably 30 women working together, and there was none of that typical, what you would think would be stereotypical issues of women working together. Like there was no cattiness. There was no backstabbing. There was no like sorority issues. Yeah. It was very supportive. And
that's terrible for a podcast.
Totally. Though. Sorry. I have no crazy stories.
No.
I mean, I've looking at it through rose colored glasses, but, but I remember it being very, very functional, and that probably came from the top down, but.
So you, the bubble burst.
Bubble burst.
And is that when you end up being a festival coordinator at San Francisco Film Society? No.
Well, yeah, actually I did that. Well, I went off and I continued the dream of being a writer, a freelance writer. And I wrote some Where Are They Nows for People magazine.
Nice.
One of which was like about hair bands, and another was about like teen rockers, I don't know, some like 70s rockers, where are they now? I did a bunch of like random stuff for People magazine and some women's sports magazines that don't exist anymore. And then I volunteered for the San Francisco Film Festival and just kind of like effed around San Francisco and hung out at coffee shops and was like, I'm an artist. I'm like loving the freelance life. I'd never had time off. I'd worked since I was like 14 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
Truly, like never not had a job. And it was really nice. And then a friend of mine's husband was a story artist at Pixar. And she was like, hey, Pixar is starting a development department and they're looking for people who have like journalism experiences or researchers. Do you want to interview? And I was like, no, I'm kind of like cool living my freelance life and getting up at 12 and having some time to myself. And she's like, it's Pixar. Like you should probably interview and get a real job.
What year is that? Is that like 2004 ish?
Yeah.
And so are they huge at that? Like, I mean, I know they're huge, but are they really like, have they already made it at that point?
They had made obviously Toy Story and they had not come out with Finding Nemo or Cars or Monsters. So it was right before that. And they'd wanted to make a movie every year and a half to 2 years, because they'd been making a movie every 4 years.
Right.
And so part of it was they wanted to start incubating ideas and getting directors in their stable. And they do development totally different from anyone else, where they don't take outside ideas. They think of ideas internally and then it's a think tank. And then they bring in like external writers to help develop them. But a lot of your job is really like helping them just develop what the idea is first.
That's really funny, because as now I always joke that like the way Pixar thinks of ideas is basically like, oh, what if this object could talk and had feelings?
It's totally and I had no idea like how cool that company was. I was not in that world.
Right.
I went in to interview just like so blasé. I was like, whatever, like this is just, I'm just doing this because my friend got me this interview.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was such Pixar,
an a-hole. Like, I mean, I really was. And the head of development at the time was this great guy named Kevin Rear, who was a producer on A Bug's Life. Really, like, I call him the godfather of Pixar, because like he knows everybody there. If like you wanted to work in
they kiss his finger?
Yes. If, like, he would like, if you wanted to like trade departments, you had to go talk to him. If you wanted to like decide, you wanted to change the kind of gum in the vending machine, you would need to go talk to him. Like he was just like the Pixar god. And yeah, we had a great, I think probably because I went in there so relaxed and just had a real conversation, like a real person. And he asked me, and I think I've said this before, but he said, have you ever worked in the service industry? And I was like, well, yeah. He's like, what have you done? I've been a waitress. I worked at Häagen-Dazs ice cream. I worked in a Jewish bakery. He's like, have you ever served people? I'm like, yeah, in what, like as a waitress? He's like, yes, like customer service. And he was like, very like, come on, ladies.
Yeah, okay. I'm prodding you.
I'm like, yeah. He's like, great, because if you want to work here, you really have to have like customer service experience, which at the time I just thought, okay, this guy is crazy and yeah. I don't think I want this job.
How does that add up?
Yeah. I actually thought it, now understanding it, he was like, well, you're going to have to be able to like deal with a bunch of very difficult people who, and by the way, like, which who are totally not difficult, but very particular people who have like a vision or a specific way they want to execute something.
They like their latte a certain way.
Exactly. They like their latte with almond milk, you know,
stevia.
Stevia.
A little bit of cinnamon.
Specific temperature. And do it with a smile and not get flustered and do it on time, on budget, you know, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which makes sense. And I got in my car, drove back across the bridge because they're in the East Bay and I lived in San Francisco, and he called me and said, you have the job.
Wow. Yeah. That quickly.
Amazing. Yeah.
And the job was manager of development?
It was to be, I started out as an assistant and then I worked my way to be manager of development and then went on to manage the art team on Ratatouille.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah.
So, wow. Okay. So you moved up fairly quickly in Pixar, and you obviously enjoyed your time there.
I did, yeah.
So what was the impetus with leaving?
A couple of things. I mean, the job was really cool. It was a lot of like art research. I would go to like the San Francisco Public Library and research French kitchens or
So awesome.
Yeah. Or they'd be like, check what's the hierarchy in a French kitchen? Like, how do the chefs work? And then I'd present it to directors for Ratatouille. Or the artists that I worked with there were amazing, very like mixed, insane personalities, but in the best way. And my job was kind of to wrangle that artistic talent into like producing something. Mm-hmm. Like you've got an art review every day at like 12 o'clock and you've got to present it to the production designer. And like my job was to get that there. Animation is such a slow process for me. I was like, I'm going to be here. I was 26, 27, and I just thought, I'm gonna be here until I'm 40 years old. And while you get promoted at Pixar and you are certainly like financially taken care of, it's an amazing culture, like incredibly amazing, but I just did not want to work in animation, and I didn't want to be a production manager and be a certain age and still be in that comfortable environment.
Right.
yeah
and I didn't love
it's
animation
not exciting anymore.
Yeah, and I was not in animation. I think you have to like just love animation.
I get that.
And I don't.
When, if you look back at the movie, at Ratatouille, is there, okay, and this, forgive me if I'm like being, okay. So is there something on there that you go, that's all me? Or is it more like just the whole movie is
There's
essentially
all
you?
There's a lot of it. Well, I mean, I can't even, like, even looking at the way that the food design is in that movie, like I researched a lot of that.
Yeah.
I presented those designs. You know, I clearly don't have any kind of, I have no artist bone in my body, but as far as just like doing the background research, or even some of the faces were drawn by guys, character designs, like the woman chef whose name I'm forgetting, the woman in the kitchen. They took pictures of like French actresses and looked at like different famous singers and made them composites of different people. So just even having that background to that movie is
really
great.
That's super cool. Yeah.
It's a cool little
insight. Amazing.
I mean, I would like to watch the movie with you. So you'd be like, yeah, see, that is actually, that's really the kind of stove they would use in 1872.
When did Ratatouille come out?
I don't even remember.
Because I remember, I don't remember what year it was, but I left college to go to culinary school, to a French
because
culinary school.
Because of that
movie? No, I think it came out after I was in culinary school, and I was kind of like, oh yeah, that's a thing.
Oh, culinary school is? Or just like...
No, because I knew all the rules and everything in like a French kitchen, so I had all these like, I had all these opinions.
It came out in 2007.
Yes, I was just in culinary school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
which is funny. But it was great. I loved it. So
yeah, and I just I wanted to. I thought, you know, I'm going to work in live action, and I. One of the writers on Ratatouille was in a band with a producer. That's honestly.
Did they just jam?
Yeah. I was like, cool. Hey, I asked her, I said, do you know, I want to work in live action. Do you know anyone in LA who works in live action? That was as simple as it was. I was like, do you know anyone who works in live action? She's like, I'm in a band with a guy who plays drums for us, and he's a producer, and he did Memento. And I was like, oh my God, he did, you know, one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. And I applied to grad school at UCLA. I thought that's going to be my ticket to like, get into live action and I'll just get my master's degree. Little did I know. And I left Pixar. I gave my notice to Pixar. I think everybody was like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
I left all my Pixar stock on the table.
Oh my God.
Everybody. Yeah. I just said,
you are.
I left all my Pixar stock on the table to go get a master's degree.
Wow.
And I mean, my parents, even my mom, even being an academic, was like, what?
Is there any regret in there?
None.
That's fine. That's great.
None. And I'm like hearing still paying off my student loans.
Of course.
They're at 2% interest.
Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah.
I always joke that I don't want kids because I'm afraid my great grandkids will have to pay off my student loans.
No regrets.
I just don't want my grandkids to ever see my tweets. That's the problem. Like, wow, grandpa masturbated a lot. You know?
Film school. May not go to film school again, but I would have left still. Yeah.
You kind of said that, little did I know, but was it a good, was it a good experience?
Did you enjoy it? I did.
And what's your master's in?
It's in film at UCLA. It's like the producing program.
Okay. So it's right up your alley.
That's what you needed. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also, I started working for this drummer in a band who's also a producer at the same time. So I think that was like, I got the same experience I was getting from the academic experience working for him.
Yeah.
But I was paying for it at UCLA.
I was just at the Spirit Awards from like my first time on Saturday.
Oh,
and
my
it's
God.
Like, it was just so cool to meet all these independent movie producers who seem amazing. And just everybody was like so cool and nice. And it just gave me some hope.
Do you feel like TV people are not that? I find TV people to be much more accessible and happy.
Oh yeah. That's the thing. I'm not used to like this. I'm used to TV people.
Yeah.
I was just telling Guy, I was at an event before that, the week before, for a charity thing, which was all TV people. It's like The Simpsons and all this stuff. And it was like, it was great because there was no red carpet. It was awesome. And everyone's really laid back. But this was completely different. But yeah, I thought it would be kind of hoity-toity and like, we're so Hollywood. But it was totally not. Yeah. So I'm glad that at least the independent film people are okay.
I saw there was a picture of you somewhere, right? Yes. And you were in the perfect tone, right?
Yes. Yeah,
that mean your outfit or your actual tone of your skin?
I think they meant the tone of the outfit.
Some was perfect for the event.
They took like a picture of me and they put it, some blogger, fashion blogger put it. I'm not even nominated in anything. I don't know why they took pictures of me.
Because you had the perfect tone.
I had the right tone.
With a friend, or were you like?
I went with a friend of mine who's not nominated either. She's in a movie that she thinks might be nominated next year. She's an actress.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but they knew I was a screenwriter because they wrote writer.
Okay.
In the description of me, so they must have Googled me.
Hmm.
But it anyway,
writer.
It was dumb.
It's very specific.
But it was it was very interesting to see the difference between the TV people and then the movie people, which was quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you enjoy working in independent film?
I loved it. I mean, I don't think I could do TV without it. And I had a boss who was just fantastic. And that's so rare. And I started as his assistant while I was going to school. And he took me on every set with him. He let me do everything. He never treated me like his assistant.
That's great.
He taught me everything I know. I looked at all his budgets. I was on all his calls. He let me into his email.
Wow.
I probably know too much about him. But
that's nice.
I worked with him at a distribution company called New Market Films. And then he had his own production company. And then he went on to be part of a company called Film Nation that just did Arrival. They did, or he produced Arrival, and they've done a lot of like international sales on movies as well. It's an international production and film company.
Wow.
I always tell people if you want to really get to know what it's like to work in the movies is to work on an independent film.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was 16, my dad knew I wanted to do it. So his girlfriend at the time was a producer. She's like, hey, I'm producing this movie for like no money. Do you want to be a free PA on it? And right. I was like, hell yeah. And because I was free help, they literally made me do everything.
Oh. Yeah.
Which was so fun because I got to, again, I got to see all these like budgets and stuff.
Totally.
And I got to be a little of every person, which was very cool that I would have not have gotten if it was a huge budget movie with like everyone with their certain roles and everyone's with their contracts. And yet the talent was, it was Rodrigo Garcia was the director. Yeah. And they did it for like $500,000, this little movie with like huge talent, like Sissy Spacek was on it. And they were all like, I could tell all the budget was going for like the minimum scale that they had to pay these actors. And they were all just doing favors for the director. But I just thought it was so cool that like they were giving me so much trust. I was like 17. I don't know why they'd
amazing.
Let, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest movie we did was The Prestige, the Chris Nolan movie.
I love that movie.
I had so much. I became obsessed with magic to the point like.
I'm obsessed with magic. That table is magic. Yeah. I'll show you later.
Yeah, I would talk about magic so much that my friends wouldn't want to hang out with me. I became obsessed with like the world of magic, with all the rivalries in magic. I always wanted to go to the Magic Castle.
I have connections because I write for them.
Well,
so
I got it through. We had a consultant on The Prestige who was this like young magician, and he would take me all the time. And
his
name was Derek Delgadia.
Yes, I know him. Yeah. Yes,
and he started doing like sleight of hand. He taught Hugh Jackman all the sleight of hand stuff because Ricky Jay was originally on it. And then I don't even remember what happened. I think he had to go do his one man show, and then we hired this guy, and I became so obsessed. Like, I would make all the other assistants like talk to me about magic, and my boyfriend at the time who became my husband.
I have like 7 magic books.
Yeah. I would like lay in bed at night and talk to him about magic, and I remember when
your palming is so good.
Yeah, he was like, "Can I just tell you something?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Magic is not hot." I'm like, oh, "Okay, it kind of is."
I think it
can
is.
Can you do any magic?
No.
You can't do any. You can't do sleight of hand.
No. I can't do. I can do magic like. The box you put a coin in and it disappears. The magic tricks that are already rigged.
Can you do a double lift?
No. I don't even know what that is.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, is it because you like know the art of magic so much you don't want to admit to being doing magic?
No.
It's just, or you really can't do any magic.
I really can't do any magic.
After all of that studying and reading all that stuff, how do you not?
Studying.
Don't you think the
quotes.
World of magic needs more women?
There are not any women in magic.
When I was a kid, there are.
Because it's not hot.
There are. I think it's super hot. Dude, I learned like three magic tricks, and I went to the Magic Castle, and I showed it off, and I had flocks of non-magic-y guys come to me.
Oh, I bet.
It was great.
The Magic Castle is very Eyes Wide Shut, though.
Yeah, I know it is, kind
of. It's very bridge and tunnel. Like, you're like, who are these people?
I've been there, though.
Where do they go after here?
I've been there, though, in the, like, I was shooting something there, and it was, like, in the morning, and we got to see, like, what it's like with all the hidden things open, and now I can't look at it the same, because, like, I know the secrets.
It's like seeing, what's that friggin' ride at Disneyland that's in the dark?
Space
Mountain in the light. I've seen that.
You've seen that in the light?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. They have that little, like, Wedway people mover, it's called, you know? In Florida, anyway. It's like a magnetic car, and they take you through the ride, and then when I went, the ride was broken, and they had all the lights on. You could see everything inside. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Oh, just like dream crushing, wooden, though.
Yeah, it is. It's never the same after you see...
Yeah.
It with the lights on.
He's
yeah.
funny. Anyway.
Much like me.
Yeah,
and
magic, man. I left all that behind.
That's good. See,
you're over magic.
Look
now.
Where you are and look where I am. Yeah. So that's good.
But, and I want to get to, because we should start getting to the Hulu thing. Yeah. And I want to know how you got the job, how you've been end up with that. But also, like, do you have a proclivity for shows about magic? But
no.
We'll talk. Okay, so there's no Chris Angel show coming to Hulu. Let's go back. How did you get the job at Hulu? How does that happen?
Do you want me to talk about how I got to TV, or should I talk about
TV?
Hulu?
Yeah.
Okay. You're like, we've got 5 minutes.
No.
So I was in independent film, thought I would do that forever, had a great boss, was called by a friend that I know who had worked with AMC a bit on a show and knew that there was a producer that they were starting a show with who was looking for a development executive. And this guy from AMC, who I'd never met before, called me and said, a producer, we have a show, we're launching a show about zombies, and she's looking for an exec this woman, this producer, was looking for an exec, and it was Galen Hurd, and the show was Walking Dead. And I had nothing to do with, people love to put it on my like bio, and I'm like, I had nothing to do with that show.
You're like 6 degrees of separation totally, from it. Yeah,
totally. But I just, it was a real kismet moment where I got hired at her company like 2 months before the show launched. The execs that were there had worked really hard on it and were great guys. And that show really thrust her into TV. And I just happened to be there when she needed a TV business built. And so we really worked on that and she got a deal and I was just thrown into television. Like I had no idea how to produce TV, how to develop TV. I thought, oh, you just take the development experience you have from features and you just apply it to television. Which is totally not true.
Okay.
And I got a crash course in TV and I worked with a really great group of guys who went on to, one of them is, one of them works for Alcon. One of them went on to go to Netflix and they kind of took me under their wing in this great way. And were like, hey, we know you're our boss, but like, we're going to show you how to do this.
That's great.
That's awesome.
And like really showed me how to do TV and we built this company together and that was my introduction to television. And then I had a child. I decided I did not want to do like the crazy, crazy hours. I basically went to her and said, I can't be the kind of executive you want me to be. I literally was like, I was so like burned out at that point. I mean, I was working all the time. I had a baby. I only took like 5 weeks of maternity leave. And yeah, it was
even
insane.
My like surgeon who like was super like, you know, feminist-y in all the ways, like, took, like, a few months off.
Yeah.
Wow.
I took six weeks of maternity leave, and I just finally was like, I just can't. I mean, I walked into her office and just said, I can't be the exec that you need for this job. And I ended up working for some really great producers, some other producers, kind of got my sea legs back. And I was just, like, again, I'd worked... Minus that like 1 6-month stint in San Francisco where I hung out at coffee shops and like dicked around. I worked my entire from 14 to like 38.
Yeah.
And I just was like, man, I just need a break. And I took some time. I freelanced. I worked for Wikipedia for a bit and did some consulting. I worked for a producer out of the UK named Karen Mandelbach, who was really amazing to me. And then producers Neil Marin and Craig Zaden, who do the Oscars, and they had a deal at Universal and learned the broadcast system. And then, you know, in a crazy, like, you should always take general meetings because you never know what's going to happen. Like, truly, someone recommended I go meet with a guy named Craig Erwick who ran Warner Horizon Television. And there was a job there, but I already knew I was taking another job. But I thought, oh, I'll just take this meeting. We got along really well. And when he went over to Hulu, he thought of me.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I took those meetings.
Yeah.
Those random meetings, but I've never heard back from
them. No, I know.
But they may remember you, so.
Yeah.
So you've had a ton of jobs, a ton of different jobs, and you're laughing, but do you think that you needed every single one of those to give you the experience to do what you're doing now? Like, is 100%. You need some of those parts.
Good.
That's amazing.
That's really great.
I know I'm supposed to talk about my failures.
You are.
No, but this is...
I was looking them up and I don't see any.
It's more like how you use your experiences.
Yeah.
And even stuff that you turned down. You turned down Pixar and stuff and how you use... that. I mean, like, that's not a failure at all, but it's a decision.
Yes.
So it kind of shows how decision making... Because really, failure is a decision to get up from where you are and start something else.
Yeah, I mean, I was an assistant. Technically, I was an assistant when I was I was 32 years old and still an assistant. And people are like, oh my God, you made such a leap. And I'm like, yes and no. I mean, I put in a lot of work up to that point. I just didn't have the ego. I say to people, like, there are a lot of people who are like, I'm this age. I should not be an assistant. I'm like, you know what? It really depends on who you're working for and what the work is. And you'd be surprised how quickly you can jump from.
And the kind of person you are.
Totally.
I think like some people just... maybe even being an assistant's not good for them because it's holding them back.
Yeah.
And they're just like, they should be nurtured and, you know.
For sure.
But don't let your ego get in the way is really the key.
Absolutely, yeah.
But don't think you can do everything.
Yeah.
So how about this? A day in the life for an executive like you. Is it glamorous?
No.
It's not glamorous. What are you doing on a daily basis? Is it you're reading emails and taking meetings? Are you deciding on what TV shows get greenlit on Hulu? I mean, all of that.
It's all that. I mean, Hulu's interesting because we have a lot of internal meetings. So today, you know, we had, let's see, a typical day are probably like a couple pitches, not a ton, not as many as a lot of our executives take, but I'll do like maybe two or three pitches. We have, like today we had a meeting where product, marketing, PR all met together to talk about kind of how we're promoting content on Hulu, or like, you know, how we're surfacing content, how are users discovering it. And that's the cool part of this job is like, I only had production and development experience, and now I have experience in like subscriber acquisition and marketing.
It's a whole new
publicity.
Yeah.
And there's just so many pieces to it that are more about strategy and the whole business versus just like,
that's cool.
I write notes on scripts, you know, yeah. Which is great. But my 16-year-old cousin who went to like a liberal, you know, went to a arts high school can write notes on scripts.
Sure.
And so it's not necessarily a skill.
Now, are you the person that decides, like, you know, are you that person at Hulu now that you decide if there are pretzels or M&Ms out for people to eat?
Yeah,
you
sure.
Do.
No. Yeah, I mean,
It's a couple of people,
yeah, okay. For sure.
But still.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, okay. But I'm just, like, asking, like, in general, yeah. Like, do you feel powerful in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're always, it's funny, like whenever an agent wants to do a pitch, they're like, can you make a decision? Can you greenlight a show? I'm like, yeah, I mean, it takes a village.
Right.
That's the
like,
thing.
At every place.
I always.
Unless you're like, if.
I mean, I'm not an agent, so yeah. I have no experience talking directly to execs. This is the closest yeah. I've ever, I mean, I've had meetings, but not like.
Tell your pitch quick, yeah. Quick.
No, but like, I'm just curious.
How's your shot?
But I really always felt like when someone, because, you know, all my friends are writers, and they say, oh, they didn't pick up my show. And I'm like, it's not one person.
No,
I have a feeling it's a collective of people. It's kind of like the election. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's definitely like certain.
A bunch of jerks.
For sure.
Certain people, like, I don't think it's one person, but
I'm kidding about the jerks
but it must
part.
Feel nice though to have some say in it because
oh definitely
because sometimes I see a show and I'm like, why did they cancel that? I wish I had a say.
Completely. And I think, you know, you if you're and we're great and like if people come to us and they're articulate, and I think everybody on my team feels empowered to buy at least to buy like scripts and pitches. I wouldn't say like every single executive can like green light a show,
yeah,
but that's you're never going to find that right. Anywhere. Yeah. You're not going to find that anywhere.
You just made me think. I'm like, can you buy season 2 of Family Tree, the Christopher Guest show that was on HBO? Anybody see that?
Oh, I did with the guy yeah. from, the British. He's not British. He's, I know who you're talking about.
Can you?
Michael McKean's on that show.
Can you buy season 2 of Freaks and Geeks?
It's yeah. one season and then it ended. And I'm like, what the?
I know.
Yeah.
A lot of good shows ended. That's the thing. Like, I always wonder.
What is that actor's name? He's in Bright.
Chris O'Dowd.
Yes. Love him.
Yes.
So good.
Yeah, he's great in that show. So, okay. So how is working at Hulu, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, maybe you do.
Yeah.
How is it different than working at HBO or an ABC or a Netflix?
Well, we don't have offices.
You don't have an office?
Nope. Our CEO does not have an
office.
Wow. Wait, so where do you work out of?
We all have
couches?
It's an office. An open office.
Okay.
Space.
Okay.
So we all have, it's not even cubicles. We have like, it's just
open desks.
Oh, I used to work yeah. at a tech company like that.
Yeah. Which is good and bad. I mean, yeah. I think it's mostly good. It also fosters a real transparency. Everybody knows what's going on. So you don't have to be like, oh, I forgot to tell this person that.
It's a really good stage for like a sitcom.
It is. It's definitely a good stage. And we have conference rooms where you can go make
oh, okay.
private calls or,
yeah.
or have arguments with
yeah.
your loved ones. But,
or look at porn.
Yeah. Or God forbid on the Hulu server. But no, it's a really interesting place too because it fosters a lot of openness and transparency in general, and
yeah.
we're such a small part of a huge machine, so it's customer service, it's marketing, it's product, it's tech. I forget how many people we are now, but I think we're around 1400.
Wow.
So that's not huge. Just in Santa Monica.
No,
but
yeah.
you know, a year ago or a year and a half ago, they made an announcement that was about something that was proprietary. I mean, nothing huge, but it was like a product thing. And it didn't leak. Like, I've never been in a company. I've been in a company with 4 people where information has like
right.
leaked to deadline.
Dude, I have secrets between my girlfriends that leak.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't me.
Yeah.
So. One girlfriend
so
and it leaks.
I think there's a real, to be in a company of that many people and to have a piece of information.
Wow, that's integrity. Not leak,
it means people really
care.
Care.
Yeah, right. That's awesome.
And that is something you don't find.
No, I don't hear that from any big network.
Their interview process is very, I wouldn't say like rigorous and that you're being like tested, but
they want to make sure you're human.
They want to make sure you're human. You interview with all levels, all parts of the company. I think I came back like 6 times.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a ton.
Yeah.
Would you call this a dream job?
100%.
It's your dream job. That's awesome.
It's a lot of work and I'm always exhausted.
But that's how we have you on.
That's why I feel lucky.
And can I ask, what do you think is, for all the aspiring writers and producers out there, what do you think is something they should know when they want to pitch to networks? What is something that networks look for that you think is hard to find that they like? And
what mistakes people make?
Or mistakes people make that you're sick of seeing?
Oh, man. I think just trying to replicate. I think people just trying to replicate what's the hot. Like, we have the next version of Stranger Things. Or we have the next. It's like, I just want to hear something.
Original.
Not even original. Or just like authentic. Yeah. Or it doesn't even have to be super high concept. Just what's true to your experience. And I think the projects that have been great for us or the scripts that are such a joy to read are the things that come from writers who it was not necessarily like their personal experience, but it was the project they just always knew how to write. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was for me, the things that it just like, we're about to do Handmaid's Tale. The writer of Handmaid's Tale is not who you'd think would be the person we would have hired. And he crushed it, and it's because it's been a book that he has loved since he was in college. And you know, we debated like, do you hire a man to write The Handmaid's Tale? Do you hire a male showrunner? Like we had that discussion, and ultimately
that's illegal. That's sexism. And
but we did. We had the conversation.
You guys have been great though with hiring female showrunners.
Oh, yeah, we have like
The Path is awesome, and I know it's a female showrunner.
Mm-hmm. Like this season, I think on Casual we have like 12 out of 13 episodes it's are great. Female directors. Yeah. Like we have a
great good. Track record.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have anything to prove.
No, but especially like I think when that came out, even there was some think piece written that was like, Handmaid's Tale is being done with patriarchy at the helm or something. You know, there's always going to be that like clickbait article.
Of course.
That's where journalism is now.
Right. But he wrote it, you know, those scripts are like candy to me because it's like he lives and breathes it and knows
that's
the
good.
Material.
And that's what you want in a show. You want someone that knows it backwards and forwards.
And cares about it.
Cares. Yeah.
It does make a difference.
He doesn't phone it in.
No.
Like the president's doing right now.
or just service it, right? It's not just a job.
He's not just doing it. Yeah.
And you can tell he loves it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure you know.
That's another thing, yeah.
The things you love, you're going to write the hell out of.
Sometimes I read scripts and I'm like, I feel like they don't want to write about this.
Yeah. Yeah. You can tell.
I feel like it's a chore.
You can tell.
Yeah, that's great. That's such a like an uplifting thing to hear because I feel like that's actually very simple. And I think if people take that advice and utilize it, they have very good prospects.
How about advice for somebody who wants to be like you? Wants to end up where you are?
No, it's a dream job, you just said.
I absolutely think it's a dream job. I think it's hard. I mean, I think just for me, I'm sometimes shocked. I think just be authentic. Right? Like, I am so not, I think I look at other executives in this business or people who posture, I can't be anything but who I am. And I think like that's served me well in some instances and in others, that's absolutely not. But I think being an executive is really hard. You have to absolutely love this job to do it. Cause it's a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice. I think that's true of any part of this business though.
Yeah. I think it's true of any really, you know, difficult job.
Yeah.
You know, you have to love it in order to do it well.
Yeah.
So.
And know what you're sacrificing.
Yeah.
Mainly like sleep and time with loved ones.
Well, you look great for all that.
Yeah, right?
I don't know how you're pulling it off, but you look great for whatever amount of sleep you're getting. You look awesome. Because I feel like when people
tell
me I look...
concealer.
When people tell me I look tired, I'm like, oh, I mean, I look shit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, so I'm glad, you know...
You don't look
I'm
tired.
I'm glad to hear that, like, you know, it's all working out.
Yeah, yeah.
So So should we ask the last question?
We should ask the famous last question.
Oh, no.
Do you have a dollar? No. Do a job for... No. Do you have a chance to greenlight my show? Do you have a favorite charity? Oh, I don't know why I shut my book because I need this to write down.
Favorite charity?
Yes.
I do.
Okay. What's your favorite charity?
Los Angeles Food Bank.
Okay. Los Angeles Food Bank. What does the Los Angeles Food Bank do?
Feeds the hungry, and not necessarily just the hungry and homeless, but working families.
Wow. Okay. So that's a great, great, great charity. We're going to give $100 in your name to the Los Angeles Food Bank.
Thank you.
On behalf of Beatrice Springborn. Also, at B-Spring, B-E-E-S-P-R-I-N-G, on Twitter. You don't really tweet. You're a retweeter.
I retweet, and I'm also just...
You're a commenter.
I'm a late night troller.
Which is always, that's the best
Do
hobby.
Do you ever go on and look like, what are people saying about our shows?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's why I spin out at 2 a.m.
Oh, so you're like Trump. You get pissed off and you're like, that show was not terrible.
No,
sad.
Not even spin out. I just...
Disappointing. Apologize.
I'm curious. I'm more curious. Yeah. Market research.
Don't worry. I don't think the hard-hitting critics are taking to Twitter. So. Right.
But do you ever get enraged? Like, come on, man. That's not even a valid...
I only get enraged in that, like... I know when certain episodes or shows are not as great as they should be. You totally know, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like an objective
Right. And creator. Not every show can be a home run.
Yeah, not every show. It's more that you just want to say to that, you want to shake that person and be like, do you know how hard it is to
do
this?
I know.
To make it all come together. And when it works, it's like a GD miracle.
Right.
So
that's why I was kind of mad. Everybody was getting mad at La La Land. Because I'm like, guys, do you know how hard it is to produce a musical?
Yeah. I think people underestimate how... I was saying this to someone. Someone needs to teach a class that, like, all of this choices made along the way in the creative process that come together to make something, right?
Yeah.
And how many missteps can happen so that when it is great, man, it's like almost, it truly is a miracle.
It's a miracle. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
And people don't think on the outside, on the outside, meaning like critics or who don't work in this industry might not see that. And that's what makes me sad is when I'm like, you just don't know.
Yeah. Well, we're spoiled. The rest of the world is spoiled because we don't understand how much work goes into it. So we can criticize. That's how it works. Beatrice, thank you again
for
being on Failing
Up.
Thank
you. This is fun. Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.